Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now on with Monkey Tennis.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support for this podcast comes from Hamilton's Water Breaks. Our boats are deceptively large, offering the luxury and comfort you'd normally associate with a good quality static caravan. All boats come fitted with a Saniflow 33 toilet, so whether it's a pound of mashed up Dundee cake or an elderly relative on board, you've no need to worry. Join literally tens of people making the most of global warming and international terrorism by holidaying at home with Hamilton's. Call us now to discuss your water break. Waterway to have a good time.
Hello listeners, Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Before we get on with episode three, again, as with last week, we just wanted to say a massive thank you because you have sent us to number one in the overall iTunes chart, ahead of Desert Island Discs, ahead of Serial, ahead of This American Life. That's insane. What have you done? You've created a monster. But thanks so much for listening. Please do continue to subscribe, listen and spread the word. And it's time for this week's episode.
Monkey tennis. Monkey tennis. Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey tennis.
Not my face, I'm doing a photo shoot for Vision Express.
Monkey tennis. Monkey tennis.
I got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Roll on the thighs of the virgin.
Monkey tennis.
Come and see bitter and listen to us. It's the third episode of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge podcast. Today we're going to be casting an eye over Watership Allen, a cameo-packed infected spinal column in a bap of an episode. My name is Adam Brooks. We also have Tom Dark.
Hello.
Nick Older.
Hey!
And Tom Stab. Before we get started, we're going to talk a little bit about our Allen origins.
Yeah, we thought it might be nice to give a bit of context on how perhaps we all first discovered Allen and our... We've all had a long-term relationship with Alan Partridge, I think. It's been a great bonding subject for us.
Definitely.
Over many years. So, I'll start with myself. So, I remember first encountering the character of Allen via the day-to-day. Seeing him being the sports reporter on that, particularly his World Cup roundup of 94, which was absolutely amazing.
Goal!
Yeah, exactly. If you haven't seen that, one, what have you been doing with your life? Two, go and watch it on YouTube immediately. But then do come back and carry on listening to this, obviously. So yeah, I guess, what year did the day-to-day air? Was it 93, 94, something like that? I think I've kind
around
of been...
early 90s, definitely.
Yeah. So I think I've been Partridge aware since since then. So yeah, kind of aware of him as a kind of sideline character before. Yeah, and then going into knowing me, knowing you after that as well.
Day to Day was 94.
Day to Day was 94. Am I right that it was Day to Day, then it was Knowing Me, Knowing You? Have I got that the right way around?
Yeah, yes. Knowing Me, Knowing You, 94.
Yeah.
But potentially.
Yeah, so the Day to Day ended in February 1994, and Knowing Me, Knowing You started in September. The following
there we
September.
Go. So, yeah, what a time to be alive. And I was, so that was good.
good to know that you
were
alive.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just clarifying the major details there. Nick Alder, how about you? How did you first encounter Mr. Alan Gordon Partridge?
I became Alan aware. I think when this series came out, to be honest, it wasn't particularly cool. I didn't see the day-to-day and everything that kind of came before this. I just saw this and didn't really have a clue what was going on.
Like so many things in life.
Absolutely. We kind of haven't discussed this, but I think if you come to this clean, you could be forgiven for being a bit confused about what sort of show this is. Is it a fly on the wall? Because the style of show that it is a little bit strange. You're not really sure kind of what the setup is.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, actually. When, in years after this, with things like The Office becoming such massive successes, and after that, I guess even things like 2012, W1A, People Just Do Nothing, that spoof fly-on-the-wall documentary style, which lends itself so well to comedy and has been done so well quite a few times now. It feels like the approach for I'm Alan Partridge, it's almost like a fly-on-the-wall documentary, but not done with any element of realism.
It's the blueprint for a lot of shows, isn't it?
Yeah, because you've kind of got the social awkwardness that overrides it all as well.
Also, can you think of a comedy like Alan Partridge that's existed in so many different mediums? I mean, it's obviously in our podcast, which is the most important.
This is key for the development of the brand.
It's been a book, it's been a radio show, it's been a TV show that's presented as if it were a real chat show. It's been a documentary style thing. You know, it's been a recording of a radio show in Mid Morning Matters.
It's become dangerously close to a pasta gravy sauce as well.
I beg your pardon.
I'm sorry.
Oh, come on. That's a line where he's experimenting with a pasta gravy sauce, but they won't go for it.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember that.
The closest I can think of off the top of my head is something like The League of Gentlemen. Like, that started off as a radio show, then TV series, then film. That's kind of the closest thing I can think of.
I guess Concord's did the same thing as well, but much later on, a tour and an album and a show and a radio show.
I mean, I guess quite a lot of comedies, particularly through the BBC route, where they'll start often something like The Mighty Beast, for example. That was a radio
that's another
comedy,
good one,
which then became a sitcom. But then I think it's to the radio comedy, to the sitcom, to the film. Not a lot of things do all three. And obviously with this, you've got spoof chat show, sitcom, film, spin-off shows, because him being a character and so many other things. So yeah, I think it's kind of...
Did you mention live show as well?
No, I didn't. Yeah, of course, the live show.
And live.
Yeah. There's a lot. Tom Stab, how did you first encounter Alan Gordon Partridge?
So I remember being on holiday in Salcombe, maybe, I was probably about 14, and my friend's older brother, who we went on holiday with, had the first episode, just the first episode, recorded onto cassette tape. So
classic.
I only knew Partridge, just literally just audio. Which originally, obviously, it started as a radio show, but
Alan would have wanted.
It was an audio version of the TV series. So I didn't get any of the visual gags. So I would hear, like, for example, in the first episode when he's driving down the road and his car says cock piss Partridge, I would just hear the laughter before and not know what they were laughing at.
Was there like long periods of silence when Sophie's away at the desk laughing to herself as well?
Yeah. I'd have no idea what was going on.
Although I feel like that was quite a common way to kind of bootleg stuff in the 90s. It was quite easy to record to audio cassette, but...
That was the first time I ever came across Alan Partridge. And then I guess probably at some point, maybe a couple of years later or something like that, got into this. Actually, no, I think I didn't watch the original series, but then the second series of I'm Alan Partridge.
So that was
came
probably
out.
Your entry point.
That was my entry point, and then went back and watched the old one.
Yeah,
so
sadly, Stab is slightly younger than the other, the remaining three of us.
You know.
Yeah. And Adam Brooks, what about you?
I think I probably started, I think I caught a couple of episodes of Knowing Me, Knowing You, and was mighty confused because I was too young for my satire radar to have gone off. So I sort of watched it. I watched it for about 12 minutes, just thinking he was a genuine, terrible presenter.
Like a poor man's Terry Wogan.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's been episodes of The One Show that have been almost as bad
as they have.
So, you know, I could be forgiven for believing that it was a real thing until I think something so ridiculous happened that I realized it was, it was a hilarious comedy.
Shot a man.
My sort of, yeah.
Yeah, he did kill a man.
My involvement with Alan Partridge has probably got more involved as time's gone on, and I've gone back to the earlier stuff. I was at uni around the time, I think the second series of this came out perhaps, and had housemates that were obsessed with it. And then eventually they went on, they released the On the Hour on CD a few years ago as well. I ended up being partially very small involvement in releasing that. So,
because you worked at the record label that released those recordings.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. So had some extremely brief name drop alert, extremely brief email exchanges with Chris Morris, which was a thrill for me and probably extremely mundane and frustrating for him. But that's fair. Before we continue, if you want to get in touch with us at all, comments, suggestions, complaints, questions, trivia, Alan, anecdotes, etc. Are you a member of the cast? Are you Steve Coogan and you just finally decided it's time for that chat? It's the Partridge Pod at gmail.com. We're on Twitter at The Partridge Pod, and we're on Facebook at facebook.com/The Partridge Pod.
Also, you can write to us. It's Adam Brooks, Bristol.
My address is Bill Carr, 10 King Road. Yeah. Anyway, we're not even on that episode yet.
We're jumping ahead of it.
Yeah. So, Watership Alan is described on the VHS sleeve as: Alan gets into deep water when he presents a promotional video for a boating company. Has his PA Lynn got what it takes to be an on-air Mrs. Partridge? Spoiler alert, no. And have the farmers forgiven him for his early morning jibes? Spoiler alert, no. I guess... It starts off with those jibes, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Poor Robert Moon is basically getting an earful from Alan, generally being patronising, derogatory, and offensive. And Robert Moon is not happy.
Mm-hmm. Once the infected spinal column in a BAP comes up, that's when it gets serious.
I also just love this is again very typical Alan, where he's just not interested in what his guest on the show has to say on the phone.
What he is interested in though is who invented the skip. Absolutely adamant to get the answer to that question.
Well, now that is the question of the day. Who did invent the skip? Has anybody done any research into this? Because I have.
I have not.
Stop typing something into Google.
As we say every week, the great thing about this podcast, if you can't bother to look on Wikipedia or IMDb, don't worry, we've done it for you. So you can enjoy listening to us whilst you're doing other things. So, who invented the skip, you ask?
Cock-a-doodle.
So just to confirm, it's not Bobby Moore.
Bobby Moore did not invent the skip. Well, that's not the information that I've got in front of me.
Is it Bill Oddie?
I don't think it's Bill Oddie. So, according to Wikipedia, and in fact, according to a Google search, so this may have been on a different website first.
It's been double fact-checked, people.
Double fact-checked.
I've got this information up as well, so let's see if it matches up.
Well, so, not my words, the words of the internet. Although skips have been used in the mining industry for a long time, the first use of a skip-like container removed by a lorry for rubbish disposal was probably in Southport in 1922. That word again, probably.
And the question on the phone and also serves the dual purpose of giving Alan another opportunity to repeatedly talk over people like he did with the Mini Metro Lynn sketch in the last episode. Yep. Who invented the skip? Who invented the skip? Who invented the skip? Who invented the skip?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. At that point with the callers, there's some. That's when he gets creative with the sound effects to cover up people's...
Which is never not funny.
Swears.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, you're ignorant. Okay, so basically Alan takes a lot of phone calls. People call him a variety of insults, which he creatively cuts off with sound effects. And then we are back to the Travel Tavern, and Alan is wearing extremely small blue shorts.
Again,
a sports cardigan as
quite
well.
Quite an important. Iconic image for Alan, which I think has been replicated quite a lot by.
Yeah.
Now, at the start of this scene, he's singing a song. Take a pinch of white man, wrap him up in black skin, etc. Now, it struck me, rewatching this, I have no idea what that song is. I thought, that, like, lyrically, this is very odd and borderline racist / offensive. Like, what is this song? So I've actually done a bit of research, so I can now inform you all, because you're
looking
confused.
Please do drop truth bombs on.
So the song Alan is singing is called Melting Pot by a group called Blue Mink. It was their debut single in 1969, and it hit number 3 in the UK charts.
Boom.
Wow. Is that everything you have on it? Because I've got a little bit more.
Wow. Ooh. Supplementary knowledge.
Go ahead.
So,
what have you got for us?
Alan is singing, you know, the lyrics, and Michael's in the corner of the room fixing a plug, and Michael repeats some of the lyrics back to Alan. Do you know what he actually says, though?
No.
And a bit of blue blood?
No, so he says, take a...
When Alan says to him, "Well, something else in Geordie."
Yeah,
yeah.
I do have the script up in front of me, so yeah. I can
look up the lyrics.
I did look up the lyrics only because when you watch that bit and you listen to what Michael says, it genuinely makes absolutely no sense. But when you see the lyrics, it still makes absolutely no sense. But you just know what he's actually saying.
Go on then.
Yeah. Is it appropriate to read it?
Is it borderline racist?
We're getting double thumbs up from producer Jed.
Producer Jed says it's okay. Also, we didn't write the song. Blue Mink wrote the song.
This is a direct quote. So the line that Michael actually repeats back is, "And a little bitty bit of red Indian boy."
Or as Alan says, something else in
Geordie. Something else in Geordie.
Well, but so, yeah, very random.
This song is dated very badly.
Yeah, well, there you go. It was from 1969, so I think that...
A different time.
It really was. You'd after racing. The next thing on my notes was, who's Cliff Thorburn? Alan's on the phone to, is it Hamilton?
Hamilton's Water Breaks.
Yes. And Cliff Thorburn has mentioned a few times. Now, I know who he is now, having done more internet-based research. But I didn't know who that was, but I assume we've all done it.
That's who Alan was up against, right, for the Hamilton's Water Breaks job.
I flirted with the idea of forming a band at university called Cliff Thorburn.
Because of the Alan Partridge references, or big fan
yes.
of snooker?
No, no, yes.
So just to clarify, yeah, he's a Canadian snooker player, and he was the world snooker champ in 1980.
I'm pretty sure that at the end when, spoiler alert, Alan is smashed by a cow, he does flag that he is a snooker player, an ex-snooker player. But anyway, that's
not a seasoned broadcaster, and therefore a loose cannon.
Exactly.
But yeah. I did think it was funny kind of rewatching this. Obviously, I've seen I'm Alan Partridge probably more than any sitcom. But actually rewatching this with a view to taking notes, thinking, I actually don't know what these references are, and only taking it upon myself now to actually find out what they are. So hopefully that means those of you that are listening
have learned something.
Literally in your tens, maybe less.
We're all learning a lot.
Hopefully you've all learned
something. We're all in this together.
Skips and snooker. That's what we're working on.
Did anyone else's parents used to use the phrase slack alley?
No.
My parents, along with the high jump, used to say slack alley a lot.
My parents used to say you'll be for the high jump. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they didn't say slack alley?
No.
Can you use it in the context of you maybe being told off?
And maybe with the context of what you'd done to be told off as well.
Nick, you haven't done your homework. You're an absolute joke of a son. We're getting really frustrated. You didn't change your ways. You're up slack alley, my friend. It basically means it's like saying you're up the creek without a paddle.
Okay.
Like you're up the...
You are a Dallinless shid.
Yeah. You're in trouble, son. You're up slack alley. You've got nowhere to go.
It basically sounded like you lived in like the Archers or something like that. Your parents going, "Oh, you little rapscallion.
Tear away.
You'll be up slack alley.
You ruffian.
Stop scrumping."
Another great phrase that doesn't get quite as much everyday use is when is Alan's best description yet of his ex-wife's new partner, describing him as a narcissistic sports pimp.
We never get his name, do we? We don't actually get that much information about him.
Yeah, I don't think so.
A bit more comes out in the book, but there's very little information about who he is, apart from being a narcissistic sports pimp.
I think also this initial Alan chat about the Hamilton's Water Breaks job is also, that's the reference to Bill Oddie in this episode, is that correct?
Yeah, we are on track for one an episode.
Looking good.
Bill Oddie. Check.
It's a hat trick of Bill Oddie references.
This is absolutely cameo packed as well, isn't it?
It really is.
You've got Simon Pegg, obviously. You've got Chris Morris later on as Peter Baxendale Thomas. Dune McCain? Yeah. As his eventual fake wife.
Yes.
On the Hamilton's break.
So more smack the pony in the
I have to stress the early fake wife, not the plastic old man fake wife towards the end of the episode.
We can't do this episode justice without talking about Alan's obsession with ladyboys. Talking to Michael, tell me about the ladyboys.
In fact, so interested are we in ladyboys that on the table in front of us we have lagers, gin and tonics and Bailey Chasers, aka the ladyboy, to try live towards the end of the show, as I'm sure many of you will have.
Get to that shortly. We're all very excited about that.
I think the exchange with Michael in the hotel room is, and the story about a friend of his in the RV who had sex with a Land Rover is possibly one of the funniest moments in this whole series.
My notes just say Michael's anal/ladyboy story recovery and then 5 exclamation marks.
Those exclamation marks equate to how funny the gag is.
Is that basically your 5-star rating? It's 5 exclamation marks out of 5.
Yep, it's brilliant.
This is also kind of the point where Lynn kind of suggests that she could be Alan's wife, which again is, I think, a bit of a further nod to the fact that there might be something between these two.
And a great moment.
Really good moment.
Just silence. For
he just says
seconds.
Nothing more and walks out of the lift in disgust. But again, I still feel like we were discussing on last week's episode that I feel like it's not a romantic interest from Lynn. It's just that kind of wanting to retain like a close bond with him.
Well, maybe it's just employer. That. It's just a bit of recognition. There's no financial recognition, bar the generous £9,000 a year.
I wonder if there's anything to be read into the fact that the first time she offers to be his wife is right after she notices that his testicles have come out of his shorts. She's seen a side of him she's never seen before, and it's made her want to be his wife in as many ways as possible.
I mean, again, the shorts are a classic moment, and the kind of I've popped out again, the boys are back in the barracks, it's not a cry for help. Again, all classic Partridge.
Probably his harshest critique of her follows as well when he says that she's very reliable, but she's got a moustache. I mean, previously it's been, you know, she's a hard worker, but there's no affection, which at least is sort of accurate, but this is just cruel.
Yeah, that's
also
quite mean.
She does go above and beyond by calling Alan's ex-wife a fat cow and hanging up on her.
Can we even think of any reliable people that have a moustache apart from Burt Reynolds, Tom Selleck, and maybe Bob Carroll G's?
No, I don't think you
there are none.
No, I think that's it. That's literally it.
Everyone's covered up.
Everyone
there.
Else is a shyster and a liar.
Or an East London hipster.
This episode's also noteworthy for the fact that I think it's got the first, well, certainly in Iron Man and Partridge, it's got the first ever Bond reference when he's referring to Dr. No vocal cords. Which obviously, there's quite a few things in the latter episodes of this series that get explored more in series two. Like there's a whole episode devoted to Bond next series, but.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the Roger Moore obsession is always.
Oh, yeah, there is that. Yeah.
Is this also the point as well where we get, Sophie confronting Alan with a bill and there's a miscellaneous service that causes
there is.
Some alarm and confusion for Alan?
He may have been watching. Bangkok Chick Boys, not Driving Miss Daisy.
I think the first thing to say here is Linton Travel Tavern, potentially part of a wider hotel group, would they have Bangkok Chick Boys, which feels like the deep end of pornographic content? Would that be available for customers?
Well, it sounds like it's quite a hardcore pornography, and surely a reputable hotel chain would deal only in softcore.
That's what I feel. But who knows? Who knows? They obviously do.
Maybe they are.
But then we don't know if this is part of a large chain, because as discussed, the Linton Travel Tavern, that's the place, not the brand name.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Also, I know they had to do it for comic effect, but would it be itemised on a bill by its real name? I don't know.
Oh, it wasn't, though, was
it?
Oh,
it's not. She writes it down. She writes it down for a note in front of
her. Oh, she writes it down. It's roughly at this point that that Simon Pegg enters playing Steve Bennett, and Peter Bainham, who wrote a lot of this, is in it as Hugh Morris, the voice box. Vocal
yes.
cordless marketing,
the marketing
director
of Hamilton's Water Breaks.
Yep. And at this point, they're running through the script with Alan, who's taking the script far more seriously than either of them.
I would love to see what's on his notes that he just pops in the bin. I can just imagine there's like wardrobe suggestions, set designs. Just think, yeah,
he's sketched the whole thing. Yeah, he's basically done a storyboard.
Yeah, just pop that
now,
in the bin.
Now, this being Simon Pegg's cameo appearance in the series, is anybody aware that Simon Pegg auditioned for a different role in this series?
No.
So, again, the things you can gain from listening to the director's commentary.
Is it
was
quite
it a regular role?
Was it a
role?
No.
Is okay. So it's not Ben?
I was going to guess Ben.
No, it's a character that only appears in one other episode this series.
Did he go for Tony Hares?
No.
Okay.
Because Tony Hares appears in quite a lot of episodes.
Yes.
Only in one episode.
Has this character appeared already?
No.
Ah, okay. Just check the notes.
Is it Jed Maxwell?
It is Jed Maxwell.
Amazing. Simon Pegg auditioned for the role of Jed Maxwell and didn't get it. So there you go.
No, I don't think he's right for the role.
He's not mental enough.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
a bit spastic or mentalist.
Interesting. And this kickstarts a whole episode long string of attempts by Alan to prove he's basically a lad's lad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so again, I think if you look in the context of, you know, it's 1997, so it's Loaded magazine, it's the ladette kind of culture, it's Oasis, it's all happening. So Alan thinks he has to kind of keep up with them being a lad, falling asleep, standing up,
for him,
being sick everywhere.
For him involves creating a ladyboy and then falling asleep on the bar after 45 minutes of drinking.
Because we've all been there.
Where does Lynn go? Because Lynn comes to the bar, he offers her one small Baileys. Where does Lynn go?
just slinks away.
Maybe she goes to the toilet or something, comes back, sees there's so much lad
later.
So much lad bants going on that she panics and goes and sits in Alan's room.
Fair enough. I think that's more just another inconsistent...
Is that a continuity error?
It's a continuity bomb that we've dropped. So that's pretty much one per episode. So yeah, anyway.
The BBC are going to get this podcast shut down for exposing their shoddy script.
Yeah, exactly.
For a multitude of reasons, including copyright infringement,
quality control.
Quality control.
And that's just Cards Against Humanity.
Well, here's a question I have around this. So, as I was going to say, he's got the Baileys, he's already got the pint of lager, he's got the gin and tonic. He orders four of them, though. And it's not clear who the fourth one's for. I can't believe he'd be buying Michael three drinks.
Or Lynn?
Yeah, I can't believe he'd buy Michael one drink.
But then he bought Lynn a small Baileys, and I can't see him... Mm.
Are you spotting another continuity error?
I don't understand who that's for, and it's not clear whether it's for Lynn or Michael, both of which we've established that, yes, he has a relationship with, but it's very much a... one where he is using them effectively.
It's also the point where he wakes up after 45 minutes of drinking at 6 p.m. he's fallen asleep against the bar, and it's the start of Confused Alan, I like to call him. I'm confused, and then I'm going to cook all the food, 3-star.
In fact, there are quite a lot of good moments with Alan throughout this series where he basically wakes up from a moment of confusion, sleep, a daydream or something, and will say something like, oh, I'm confused, or I'll fight you, which happens in the first episode.
You're sexy. Yep.
The first episode when he has the first strip club daydream, he wakes up and says, I'll fight you. So that's also quite a kind of recurring Alanism.
Mm-hmm. And basically, his wife, Carol, who, as we established in the previous episode, was a league below Jill in the sex leagues.
Well, I think you established that, Nick, and we just went along with it.
I think that was inferred from what was said in the episode. But basically, she's been called a fat cow. She's recovering from that. And then she gets blasted with more drunken chatter from Alan, who basically has a go at her new partner. And his Renault Megane.
Oh, yeah. tries to absolutely slate the guy by reading out a very mild negative review of his car.
Absolutely.
I do love it when he says he's having the best time since sliced bread.
Yeah, he basically says that the horsepower is insufficient and that basically overtaking National Express coaches is a painful and long drawn out affair.
Which is, it's not even that bad a review.
It's not even that bad.
It's middling really. Review.
Probably update that for the Megabus if it was going out now.
But they just tend to catch on fire.
Yeah,
they catch
fire.
So obviously, I think before we go any further, I think it's high time that we all treat ourselves to a Ladyboy Chaser.
Hello.
Would you not agree with that?
That sounds
I'm down.
Dangerous and
so,
uh-oh.
Our glamorous assistant producer, Jed, is possibly... If you could hand us the various drinks required.
You've already cast him in the Lynn role today, haven't you? Go and fetch our drinks.
Thanks, Lynn. So it's happening live now.
Remind me of the order that he drinks these in. So
I've got a note of this. It is the beer first, the lager, the boys' drink, and then followed by the Baileys, and then the gin, which are girls' drinks.
Okay. And what are we doing? Sip a beer, sip of all three in quick
yeah,
succession?
Yeah, so you don't down them. You're
this is going to curdle in my throat, isn't it?
You're drinking them in rotation.
I'm going to go ahead and drink mine, because if we all sip it at the same time, that's dead air, and dead air is a crime.
Okay. So who wants to go first?
I'm happy to go first.
Has anybody around the table had a Ladyboy Chaser before?
Yes.
I'm glad you phrased it like that.
So all of us have, apart from...
I haven't, Adam. So I'm going to go first.
Okay, so Adam's going to go first. So Adam, the order is...
That order again is beer, Baileys, gin.
Okay.
He's going for it, really. Feel free to talk while I do this.
He's going for the beer.
There he goes, swig of beer.
That's fine. I'm used to that.
Good.
Okay.
Baileys next. Baileys next.
Oh, Baileys next. Oh, I almost
very
out,
confusing.
Out of order. Oh, I hate Baileys so much.
It's Christmas.
Oh, there's a wince.
And truly followed foul. By the gin.
Gin. Do you know what? It kind of works.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, wow. Okay. We've got a convert.
Oh, actually, no. Hang on.
I think maybe we can all now have a round with Adam.
You get involved. I'll dig
up. Producer Jed is going to join us here too. Cheers.
Cheers, Jed.
Cheers. I will say that I was on a stag do probably a good 2 years ago now. And
Baileys.
The stag... I didn't watch Alan Partridge at all, and we ordered him a Ladyboy, and he basically downed everything, not realizing that you could absolutely sip them. And within about 45 minutes, he was basically on the floor. And the evening finished after about 3 hours of drinking, and the night just came to an end. Yeah. And he was an absolute drunken mess.
Whereas we've got to present the rest of this podcast.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? Yeah. Just do another round.
Yeah,
also,
how can
I think,
you hate Baileys? Creamy deliciousness.
Nick and I actually went to university together, and I think we've had a few nights out in the past where Ladyboy chases have been consumed. And, you know, it all seems like fun and games at the time, but I can confirm it does lead to some poor life decisions. So that is a thing that has happened.
See, the thing is, what happens is you drink the lager, and then you drink the Baileys, and the Baileys is the sort of the overpowering taste. And you go, oh, very, well, I think it's delicious anyway. And then you have the gin and tonic, and then you go, it's not so bad. And then within about 10 seconds, it starts to amalgamate and just,
So our producer Jed has was not really aware of a Ladyboy Chaser, and he looks like he's about to cry.
He's certainly aware of it now.
He looks like he's about to cry or be sick or do both at the same time.
Just not
too far.
He's poured lager into his Baileys, listeners. He's putting gin in it as well.
He is
made
the humanity.
It's instantly.
Sorry, this isn't very good podcasting at all. No. But why is it changing density? I don't understand.
It's separated into two milky layers.
So it's like a chemical reaction.
For the benefit of everyone at home, Jed has just gone all in and poured his Baileys lager and gin into one glass. He is now going to drink it. It looks like it's completely separated.
I'd like to stress,
we've not gone solid.
We have not peer pressured him into this. He's chosen to do it off his own back for some reason.
Oh my God.
Absolutely appalling.
It looks wrong.
If he downs it, my God.
Oh my god.
So for the benefit of those listening at home, this is not the way to drink a Ladyboy. Do not mix your drinks.
Oh my god.
You are supposed to,
we did not prep it.
You remember those terrible life choices Tom Dark mentioned earlier? They're happening right in front of us.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, back to the episode, perhaps.
It
looks like milk that's been left in the fridge for about 9 months.
Yeah, I don't recommend drinking Ladyboy drinks. Although the good thing is, if you see what's happened to the mixed up Ladyboy drinks in the glass that Jed has there, that is basically what's happening in our stomachs right now.
Yes,
so
we did also go out for a massive lunch as well.
So that's excellent.
More recording. Bad times.
So off the back of Ladyboy Chasers and the fact that now we've all drunk them in real life, does anyone have any other examples of real life partridge instances? So I think Nick, you were saying you went on a partridge themed stag do. Could you elaborate on that for us?
It was the story earlier was just about having Ladyboys on a stag do.
I see. It's different stag do.
Two different stag do's. So one was just an instance of drinking a Ladyboy on a stag do. Second instance was actually going on an Alan Partridge themed stag do. So we basically went to Norwich, we stayed at the Travel Tavern, we all dressed up as characters, we went to the Owl Sanctuary, we ran around the cloisters at Norwich Cathedral, we went boating on the Norfolk Broads, fed beef burgers to swans. you get the idea.
I mean, that sounds like the perfect stag do to me. That sounds ideal.
It was very good. And it was on YouTube until it was recently taken down due to copyright infringement.
That seems to be a recurring theme.
Yeah.
Can we try and get that re-uploaded in some way so we can put a link?
We will. We'll link to it. We'll get it up.
We'll put a link for that on the social medias.
Yeah. And obviously, in addition, three of us around the table once lived together and hosted an Alan Partridge-themed Easter Sunday party.
Where the sports casual theme?
Yep. Most of the music was Alan-themed, wasn't it? As much as we could get away with. Yep. And it was titled Sunday Bloody Sunday after his famous misinterpretation of the U2 song of the same name.
Really encapsulates the frustration of a Sunday.
Yep. Yep. Coming up in a future episode.
And it wouldn't surprise me if Ladyboy Chasers got drunk that evening as well. Although I do remember what also happened at the house party was everybody wore all my clothes, but that's more of a friends thing than an Alan Partridge.
Yep. And I went to bed about 8 o'clock.
Because it was a great night.
Yeah, and didn't we annoy the neighbours that night as well?
I think some people might have climbed over into their garden, but that's probably not
not for this podcast.
Probably not for the podcast.
Was there anyone around this table?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Please, and it wasn't me, and it wasn't Tom. Please climb responsibly. Anyway,
hello, if you're listening, neighbours. Sorry.
I'd just like an update on producer Jed. Jed, through the medium of thumbs up or down, how are you feeling post Ladyboy? It's double
two thumbs down. Right in the crotch.
Any other real life Partridge to talk of, or any real life Ladyboy to talk of?
Well, it relates more to the next episode, but I saw on YouTube the other day that somebody went back to famous mentalist Jed Maxwell's house and recreated the running away, driving away scene.
That's on YouTube.
That's on YouTube. And also,
that's another link that we will share.
There was also an article recently on Zoopla because a few years ago, Jed Maxwell's house was up for sale and there was a bit of a bidding war amongst that Partridge enthusiasts.
Amazing.
Same as there was for the house from Spaced a few years back.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we'll save more of the Jed Maxwell stuff for the relevant episode. But no Ladyboy stories from
We went to Thailand. Bangkok, didn't we, Tom? We went to Thailand.
Just to confirm, not just me and Tom, there were other people present as well. It wasn't one of those sort of.
We had some massages, didn't we?
Again, all legit, all on the beach in public view.
All above board.
Yeah, we didn't check what was going on, though, did we?
Who knows?
Back to the episode. Dean McKinnon is now playing the part of Alan's pretend wife. I think they're on the water break doing some recording. He tries to feed her bacon, and then she reveals she's a vegetarian, despite being his wife.
It's so awkward as well, that stuff. Like, obviously, the whole show is pretty awkward, but they have really kind of captured that awkwardness where they're just on a pokey boat.
Yeah. Why is she being an absolute dick?
I don't know. I think what it is is because earlier in the week she's gone for an audition for the bill. She doesn't know if she's going to get it.
Yeah.
So she's tense. She's nervous.
I do love a reference to the bill.
Yeah, and she doesn't know what's going to happen, and so her mind's flying. She's thinking of other things. So when it's like, do you want bacon or not? No, she wasn't.
She was
quite rude.
And I think there are more unused scenes that feature her in. So you've got the first time they meet and he walks up going, who's my wife? And I think the whole thing is very awkward from the outset.
There's another reference to town planning as well. As he's going down the canal saying, try pedestrianising this. As if anyone would or cares. Also, it's the first Static Caravan reference.
Yes, I also noted that.
Which obviously Static Caravan plays a very large part in the next series.
A premonition of the future.
What is the reference? What does he say?
It's something. I'm not sure. It's something along when as he's presenting the water break, he's saying that you could, you know.
I have the line here.
Here we go.
My wife and I found an egg shop as a kind of luxury and comfort. It offers a kind of luxury and comfort you'd normally associate with a good quality Static Caravan.
So we know he's already on board with Static Caravan.
He loves a Static Caravan.
And then there's a short interview with possibly my favourite one episode character of the series.
Nick agrees with me.
Alice, the lone water holiday lady who insists on holidaying alone, and Alan cannot wrap his head around that idea.
But also, he opens the conversation by saying she's not going to shrink me into a little bottle, which is just the weirdest thing to ever say. Yeah. That isn't a thing. No one says that. You're not like... You just wouldn't say it, would you?
No.
You know the reference. Why he said that, right?
Yeah, it's an Alice in Wonderland reference.
Oh. I literally had no idea.
I mean, I take your point, it's still weird, but perhaps less weird than you thought.
I feel like such an idiot.
Yeah, we agree.
No disrespect to the actress that plays Alice.
Not looking 25?
No, but she definitely has the appearance of someone who was sort of like a friend of the crew rather than an actress.
I don't think she's an actress.
Well, interestingly, that you say that. I believe she was a runner on the production, so they literally just got her to do that role.
That makes sense.
She played it brilliantly. Mm.
She really did. She made it her own.
Yeah.
There is also one other thing I was going to say. When we were talking earlier about our introductions into Alan, I can remember the promo trails for this. Were of Alan basically flushing the Dundee cake down the toilet. This is like my first, so I obviously came into it halfway through the series. That trail doesn't explain anything about the show. You're like, a man on a canal boat is flushing a pound of Dundee cake down a toilet. He looks ridiculous. I have no idea what's going on. I just know I'm going to watch it.
It's a clip of a show within a documentary, which is a
promotional video within a show.
It's really deep. It's the inception of comedy.
Yeah.
Also, I've kind of noticed a lot that there must be so many scenes that didn't make the final cut for these episodes, because you get the intro sequences for each episode that have bits of footage that aren't in the normal episodes.
Pop that in
so
the bin.
There are, like, in the Hamilton's water break footage, you've got him on a boat dressed as a sailor. There are unused scenes of him like trying to eat spinach, like Popeye and things like that. So it'd be really interesting to see all the stuff that didn't actually make the final cut. There are so many different scenarios that didn't get used.
Yeah.
Send us your stories at what's our Twitter handle?
It's the Partridge Pod.
At the Partridge Pod.
Anyway, we need to move on because we're getting into the scene now where he's forced to defend his farmer's comments against Peter Baxendale Thomas.
Can I just say one thing, apart from where chocolate oranges are available from? For me, this is one of the funniest exchanges of the series. I think this is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and also the script for this.
It's not that dissimilar to the sort of exchanges that Chris Morris has with Stuart Lee in recent series of Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle, in that he basically is just tearing Alan apart.
Can I just check, how is everybody getting on with their Ladyboy Chaser?
I'll be honest, I'm just drinking the beer.
Yeah, me too.
This is disgusting.
Although I'll probably finish my gin, but it's the Baileys.
Remember, it is only a small Baileys. So
it's been topped up.
Yeah,
it's generously.
It's not so small anymore.
Yep.
Jed, how are you doing? Thumbs up, thumbs down? One thumb down, but...
Again, to his crotch.
Yeah.
And obviously, Chris Morris is of particular significance because he wrote a lot of The Day-to-Day, where Alan originated as well. So it all came back around.
So why is this chat so good? Why is it so funny? Or is it just because the script is great and it's brilliant?
I think it's because of the randomness of Alan's accusations.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
they're not based on any sort of fact. The beef burgers for swans, is it chips to donkeys?
I think that's grounded in fact, isn't it?
It just gets more and more outlandish. The 20-foot high chickens. I mean, there's like...
big-eared boys on farms.
Yeah, big-eared boys on
farms. He literally won't stop. He clearly knows that he's met someone that's far more intellectual than him and can basically chat in.
And does that.
Yeah, so he basically starts clutching at anything that he can get his hands on just to insult Peter Baxendale Thomas.
And also, Peter Baxendale Thomas has done enough research to be able to really skewer Alan's living situation. So he says, "You've been living like some bloody tramp in a lay-by, a sordid little grief hole, you know."
Which is a travel tavern.
Excellent bit of script, sordid little grief hole. That is fantastic.
And until that point, I don't think anyone in the programme has really pointed out how dire Alan's living situation is. You just know it as the viewer.
Also, what I like about that is Peter Baxendale Thomas has, you know, been incredibly articulate and come back with very well argued rational thought. You can tell at this point he's like, oh fuck this, you're living like a bloody tramp in a lay-by.
Also, it's great because Alan just, you know, he's just being an idiot, and his whole retorts are just really immature. So things like, how many cows have you got? He says, I've got 100 cattle. He says, yeah, I've got 104 friends. Stuff like that.
Yeah, and Alan's face drops when he calls him a tramp that lives in a lay-by. Up to that point, he's kind of not too fazed, but that really does cross the line.
And it's another thing where Alan's obsessed with accuracy. He's like, you know, in a lay-by, he's like, it's a travel tavern.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't mind the fact it's an insult as long as it's accurate. I feel like in that bit, if Alan was a bit more apologetic, you'd almost side with him. You know, you'd almost...
Yeah.
Because Peter Baxendale Thomas is the first person who's more powerful than Alan, if you like, in the way he attacks him and stuff.
He kind of is a bit of a posh sod as well, you sort of think.
With Blums in his mouth.
Yeah. So yeah, I kind of want to go with Alan, but he's been so outlandish and so ridiculous that you kind of can't.
What, you think that they don't really make pigs smoke?
Not now, not after the smoking ban.
Back in the 90s, did.
I feel like back in the day, yeah, that's probably what would happen on a farm.
And
you've gone full Alan.
Oh dear. And has anyone seen the big-eared boys on farms?
What does that mean?
It's an implication that there's incest going on.
So much.
Again, another joke that Nick has struggled to realise. So let's hope that he's not the only one that's learning something new from listening to this podcast.
I just thought the boy had very big ears. Didn't think that was a problem.
He can hear well.
Anyway, tell us your farming stories at... What's the Twitter handle?
It's the Partridge Pod.
Cut this.
So once he's been skewered by Chris Morris's character, although the character leaves and Lynn comes in and is forced to then do the low voice,
yes.
pretending to be him. We're back on the filming schedule, I think.
Yes. Go back to filming.
One of his monologues that he's doing to camera starts, "One of the benefits of global warming and international terrorism," which strikes me as He's taken the Hamilton's Water Break script more seriously than everyone else, but perhaps they should have had a look at it.
I did learn as well from the director's commentary, because it's coming up to this bit when a cow is thrown on him, even though obviously it's not a real cow, the fake cow that was thrown on Coogan is actually very heavy, so he had to make sure he was in a very relaxed state when it landed on him, so he didn't actually get injured. Not my words, the words of Steve Coogan then.
What sort of relaxation do you do to prepare for a giant cow being dropped on you?
Be a bit floppy, I guess. I mean, I'm sure Steve will hear this podcast and want to get in touch with us next week.
Yeah. Oh, he'll want to get in touch,
Steve,
I'm sure.
Steve, if you could just get in contact with us.
To begin legal proceedings.
Just let us know how indeed you managed to prepare that, yourself for that moment.
Yeah,
by
that's at the Partridge Pod on Twitter, or just email us at thepartridgepod@gmail.com. Yeah, whatever works for you, Steve.
You can write to us at Adam Brooks, Bristol.
10
Imagine King if someone sent a letter and it actually made it to my house. I'd be very impressed.
Well, there's a challenge. If you're listening, that address again is Adam Brooks, Bristol. Please do send mail.
Massive tangent, but they used to do that on Live and Kicking. They tried to encourage people to write the minimum amount of letters on an envelope and it would still get to them. And somebody once just put, someone just put L ampersand K and it made it.
What?
Yeah. Anyway.
Something else that happened in the 90s. So
it was relevant. Hashtag relevant. Another thing that happened in this episode that I liked a lot was as soon as the cow falls on Alan, before they've even checked as to his welfare, voice box man is already on the phone to Cliff Thorburn
to get
a replacement for Alan. Yeah, well, I guess he is the marketing director. That's going to be his primary concern, isn't it? It doesn't really matter if Alan's been crushed to death by
the cow. The cow landed on Alan.
The insurance will cover it.
The cow landed on Alan about 8 seconds before he calls Cliff Thorburn.
I do also like that when the cow falls on him, you can hear the... What's the marketing director called? Peter Bainham? Whatever his character's name is.
Yeah.
Farmers! As if he's aware of the issue with farmers.
Now, talk about Peter Bainham. So obviously he's one of the three writers of the whole series. So the writers being Coogan, Peter Bainham, and Armando Iannucci. Now, I think we could probably all name quite a few things Peter Bainham has been in. We've all seen these because there's quite a tight-knit kind of comedy family. Around this world, so Fist of Fun, The Day to Day, Friday Night Armistice, Jam, Smack the Pony, Brass Eye, Big Train. But did you know he has also been in The Bill?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was going to say, according to his Wikipedia, he makes an appearance in Red Dwarf as well at some point.
I did not know that.
For crossover fun, why not try Smegheads, the Red Dwarf podcast?
Also available on Post Pop Records.
He's also a co-writer credited with Borat, Bruno and Grimsby, so working with Sacha Baron.
Oh, he's got a good hit record, isn't he?
Yeah, he's
doing all right for himself.
Nice. Anyway, do we need to talk briefly about Alan's failed wank?
What is there to say?
He finally reaches such a low point that he caves and is willing to accept to the people on reception that he is in fact watching pornography. And then he gets them to put it on his telly, only to find that his hand is so bandaged up that he's unable to perform.
Have you guys had any failed wanks?
Send us your failed wank story.
I couldn't even get the sentence out.
That's at the Partridge Pod.
I do like Brooks Bristol.
Do not post your failed wank stories to me. I'm not interested.
I do like the fact that when you see Ben basically disable porn, it you can see that he basically just flicks a switch on the back of the box, but that's too much for Alan to work out.
Do you want me to turn it from on to off? Do you want me to help you find the button that says off?
But you just try and set up the bath, the mirror in the bath situation that Ben has already given him a tip about. So the question begs, is Ben wanking in the hotel?
The answer is yes.
I think it's a given.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe less so now he's getting together with Sophie.
That pretty much wraps up this episode, doesn't it?
I think so, unless anyone's got any forgotten facts.
No.
Okay. All right. It's probably time to wrap up then.
So I think before we dive into Cars Against Alanity, pending our lawsuit.
That fan favourite section of the show.
Everyone's tuning in week after week to hear what happens next.
The louder you scream, the faster it goes.
Also, to play out this episode, we have got a, I don't know what to call this, an Alan Partridge remix, or I don't really know. Basically, an MP3 of an Alan Partridge track that I discovered back in the university days. So it's basically built around the "Ooh, Ladyboys" refrain, which I think is quite difficult to find online these days. So we will play out the podcast for that. It's a little bit of a treat. No idea who made it. If you made it, feel free to get in touch. We'll give you a credit, but just don't tell us to take it out because that would be really annoying.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Adam, over to you.
Okay, it's time for this week's round of Cards Against Alanity, a card game loosely based on Alan and loosely based on Cards Against Humanity. Please don't sue us. It's all for fun.
It's just loosely based on a random idea.
For copyright reasons, it's nothing like Cards Against Humanity.
Correct.
So all of the phrases on the cards that have been handed to each of the hosts, they are words or phrases that come from this series of I'm Alan Partridge. And each week we take a line from the episode we've just been discussing and they have to try and finish it as best they can. Once that's done, producer Jed, say hello.
Hello.
That's the only time he gets a microphone. He will ping a bell when we get to the one that he likes the best, and that is this week's winner. So far, Nick is ahead with 2. Everyone else is on 0.
Hey!
This week,
and this week's winner gets a large shot of Bailey's.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, dear.
Okay, so the line that you're looking to complete this time, episode 3, I'm having the best time since... ...
Oh, this is a tricky one.
I'm having the best time since... A lot of furrowed brows... Got almost everyone's cards.
Tom's is in.
Okay, I've got all the cards.
Opening the Baileys now. I think the winner can have their prize live on the podcast.
I'm going to show the answers to Jed so he can pick his favourite, and then I'm going to read them all aloud, and he will ping his bell when we get to the best one.
Very, very tense.
Dead air is a crime.
Very tense times here in the podcast studio.
Okay, so I'm having the best time since Ladyboys. I'm having the best time since a corporate for Allied Dunbar. There we go.
Okay. Okay, we have two more.
I'll read out the end. More. I'm having the best time since Blue Nun, or I'm having the best time since an all-night rave, which actually makes more sense than the rest of them. Okay, so who was the corporate for Allied Dunbar?
Hey!
It was Nick again.
3-on-3 for Nick.
We can only just match him. We can't catch him. So that's Cards Against Alanity. There'll be more of that next week as well.
I think my forfeit is doing a generous gulp.
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay.
Bailey's Irish Cream.
Off you go then.
Do you want to do that and then we'll get your reactions afterwards?
Okay.
There he goes. It's going down.
Down the hatchet. Oh, he stopped it.
So happy.
Absolutely disgusting.
That concludes this week's Cards Against Alanity, and we're almost at the end of the episode. Join us next week. We're going to be talking about Basic Alan, the episode where almost nothing happens, but also everything happens. You can get in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/thepartridgepod. Email us thepartridgepod@gmail.com, or on Twitter, we're @thepartridgepod.
And we will now play you out with the Alan Partridge Ladyboys Megamix. Enjoy. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bangkok. Ladyboys. Looks like a lady. In fact, it's a chap. It's a chap. Yo, what's up, G? Some homie's been dissing my bitch.
Hello, Alan.
God created Adam and Eve. He didn't create Adam and Steve. Ooh, oh, I'd love to have it off with her. Hello, Camp David.
Hello, Alan.
It's a chap. Uh-huh. Looks like a lady. It's a chap. Uh-huh. Ladyboys. It's a chap. Uh-huh. Looks like a lady. It's a chap. Chap. Ladyboys. You fill in the pond with concrete, you plough the family into the field, you blow up the tree and use the leaves to make a dress for your wife, who's also your brother. Looks like a lady. It's a chap. Uh-huh. Ladyboys. It's a chap. Uh-huh. Looks like a lady. It's a chap. Uh-huh. Lady boys. It's a chap. Kommen Sie bitte und listen to Kraftwerk.
This is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. To find out more about the records they release and the podcasts they make, head to postpoprecords.com.
Monkey tennis? Monkey tennis? Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey tennis?
Look at my face! I'm doing a photo shoot for Vision Express!
Monkey tennis? Monkey tennis?
I got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Roll on the thighs of a virgin. Monkey tennis?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.